The return of the Heineken Champions Cup did not disappoint, with brilliant matches right across a round one weekend that started with Leinster looking lethal.
McGrath with two, the champions with the bonus point. Leinster go in search of an eighth try and a half century. There's very little that Wasps can do to stop them, and there it is.
Plenty of big wins and terrific performances to talk about from the opening matches, and Freddie Burns might get a mention as well. We'll also focus on round two, which begins with a tough tussle on Friday night.
You sort of forget Leicester Scarlets, it's all those matches, always England versus Wales. Fortress, Welford Road, it's been creaking recently. That's something they want to put right straight away.
Rafael Ibanez joins us to chat about a mixed start for the French teams, and James Downey discusses Munster and Leinster in particular. You'll also hear from Johnny Sexton, Johan Ackerman, Tom Youngs and Ken Owens. Plus, there's a European Rugby Challenge Cup chat as well. It's all on the EPCR European Rugby Show. Hello and welcome to the podcast. I'm James Burridge, joined this week by Tom May, as usual, fresh from another busy weekend looking at European rugby, and Rory Lawson, formerly of Scotland, Edinburgh, Newcastle and Gloucester. Tom, you're a Newcastle man, you're a Toulon man, but one of your teams had an absolute blinder and one of your teams had an absolute shocker.
They did, and I predicted it, didn't I?
You did, actually.
I'm not going to pat myself on the back.
No,
maybe I will.
I've noticed you've been talking about that a lot on Twitter so far.
Yeah, I have, because I got a couple wrong as well. But yeah, what an absolutely fantastic result for Newcastle down there. I guess there's probably a bit of complacency from Toulon's perspective, but such a difficult place to go and play no matter what form they're in. You know, they were short of a few, Newcastle, missing Toby Flood, missing Nicky Gonover, but they did brilliantly, didn't they?
More on that later on. Rory, from the sublime to the ridiculous, have you ever done a Freddie?
Thankfully, I've not. It's painful to watch. He's a former teammate of mine at Gloucester. I know him as a character. He does like a bit of showboating, but on that occasion, he just got it oh so wrong. And it's amazing the headlines that have kicked off the back of it.
Rory, who are your team of the weekend?
Look, I think it's tough to look beyond Leinster as defending champions, but I am going to look beyond them. And I have to say, I'm going to look for another Irish team, Munster, at Sandy Park, managing to pick up 2 points. That would have been like a win for them at Sandy Park in really challenging conditions. And in a group, a tough group with Gloucester and Castra, those 2 points could prove to be so, so crucial in a really tightly contested group.
Absolutely. Well, as usual, we've been gathering your thoughts from social media. At Champions Cup is the Twitter handle. You can search for European Rugby Champions Cup on Facebook and at European Rugby Champions Cup on Instagram. We asked which player impressed you the most in Heineken Champions Cup round one and why, and we'll read out some of your responses during the show. Next, we'll look back on those terrific opening pool matches and preview Heineken Champions Cup round two.
I'm Peter O'Mahony, and I'll be listening to the EPCR European Rugby Show.
Well, there were so many great round one matches, it's difficult to know where to start. But we'll begin with Pool 1, which saw the biggest OMG moment of the weekend in Freddie Burns' dropped try and so much discussion on social media. We then had the holders on the opening night looking imperious. Leinster 52, Wasps 3. Tom May, I mean, we knew Leinster were good. Did we know they were that good?
Well, I thought they were going to win, but I didn't think they'd win by that much. And what's that? That's the heaviest defeat for Wasps in 105 games. Clearly, they're missing a few, and that they would have expected more from their performance, but they'll be hugely disappointed from that on a Friday night in Dublin. You know, tough conditions, but Leinster made it at times look really, really easy.
What on earth is Di Young? What can he do about this, Rory? Because they were absolutely blown away. He looked as if they were beaten before they went out on the pitch.
I think they were, and I think he's being stretched at the moment. When you look at the breakdown of his squad at the moment and some of the guys that he's missing, Nathan Hughes, Jimmy Gopperth, Dan Robson, key guys within that team. And I know that there are very handy replacements, but at the same time, you're essentially coming up against an international side, and not just an international, a very, very good international side. And I think for me, it highlighted just how good Leinster are. It highlighted the consistency and performance that they've got. It also showed a little bit of new detail that Felipe Contepomi has brought to the table. And I thought they were hugely impressive. And as impressive as they were, Wasps were incredibly disappointing. And it just goes to show, though, going into half-time, I think it was 7-3 going on after 38 minutes, then Sopoanga got his yellow card. Leinster just showed their class, showed their champion nature, scored before half-time, and then after half-time just took the game away from Wasps.
And it's details as well, isn't it, Tom? I mean, you look at that Cronin try, the way he went right through the heart. I mean, I think Gaskell was distracted by another runner, but you can't afford to leave holes like that in Europe, either in the Premiership either. I mean, it just makes you wonder how Wasps' defensive pattern was set.
Well, I think any defence is going to be stretched against an attack like that. And I think it's right that Rory mentioned Felipe Contepomi. He's certainly brought a huge amount of attacking endeavour and accuracy to what they're doing. I thought the accuracy and pace with which they played was some of the best rugby I've seen from a Leinster side.
Well, have you ever seen a prop pass and distribute as well as Furlong? I mean,
he went inside, went outside, and then sort of a one-handed offload to, you know, to
so does that come
away
from a team unbelievably full of confidence, or is that a player skill thing?
I think it's both, and it's players that actually, okay, he's a prop, but he understands the game. He understands what defenders are doing and how to try and manipulate them to put other people in space.
My view is just that you take Joe Schmidt, Leinster, he put the building blocks in place. He made every player accountable for their understanding of the game and how they execute the game. You then bring in a new voice, Stuart Lancaster. He brings some new ideas to the table. And then you add an extra bit and you bring Felipe Contepomi. And without any of them confusing the other, it's almost like they just get better and better. And when they add players into that environment, they improve the players. They don't have the players go in there and say, right, you're just going to slot into the system. They make the players better. They have them fit in to a system really nicely. And the club game is different. Tadhg Furlong would do that at international level, but would he throw that offload under Joe Schmidt? I'm not 100% sure. Can he do it in a Leinster jersey when all the other guys are fully tuned in and they're not so concerned about making a mistake? Yes, much more comfortable.
The only team I can think who can play like that are New Zealand in terms of the distribution, expecting a prop to pull off a move like that.
Let's line it up. Let's start it here. Let's start the Leinster-New Zealand game.
I mean, you really would pay good money to watch Leinster against
amazing,
the All Blacks right
it?
Now.
It would be amazing. And from the old touring days, you know, and a New Zealander that stood out amazingly on Friday night, James Lowe. He didn't even make the final time, did he?
No.
Last time round in Bilbao, he didn't even get in the team. Ran nearly 200 metres on Friday night, and that's unheard of. So, you know, some of his play, whether it be with ball in hand or actually trying to manipulate defences, create space for other players, he is brilliant.
You talk about that, Tom, about James Lowe, because we've been asking on social media which player impressed you the most in Heineken Champions Cup round one and why. And Mark Lynch on Twitter says, James Lowe is in flying form at the moment. Just love the enthusiasm he brings to his game. And it definitely has a knock-on effect on the players around him. So James Lowe, take a bow. And Carly Madbear on Twitter says, not a player, but a team. Leinster rugby made us happy last Friday. So you look ahead to this weekend and who they've got to lose away. Rory, I always say this for key moments like this. You're in the Toulouse coaching corner right now and you've just watched 80 minutes of enthralling, brutal, emphatic rugby. How on earth do you prepare for that?
I think you've got to match them physically. I think you've got to get yourselves into the game early doors and build pressure. It's much easier said than done against this Leinster side. But it's a tough place to go and play. And Toulouse back at the top end of Europe, they'll be buoyed after a win that they potentially shouldn't have had at the Rec against Bath. But at the same time, bizarrely, they'll be underdogs at home, because they're facing the champions, they're facing a strong Leinster side, so they're not expected to win. Maybe they'll come out and some of the young players will rise to the occasion. Some of the key guys within there, you know, Jerome Kano, it'll be really good to see him and whether he's got much to say and much within his armoury to be able to stop this Leinster attack. But it's a huge challenge, isn't it?
Let's hear from the Leinster skipper, Johnny Sexton. He's expecting a tough test in the south of France.
The changeover of players that they had sort of in the summertime, you think it could go one or two ways, and that they've seemed to have gone got better. They've seemed to be stronger, more together, and they've been very impressive so far. They've got a lot of young guys that were part of that French under-20s World Cup win, so they certainly won't be short in confidence. And yeah, it'll be a different challenge to Wasps at home, but to win in France there, when I was growing up watching the European Cup, the away wins in France were the most special to watch and to be a part of, and it'll be no different.
Well, that's Johnny Sexton. Let's look ahead then to that game with Toulouse, because they returned to the Heineken Champions Cup with a tense 22-20 win at Bath, who had two golden opportunities late on to clinch victory for themselves.
Through this time, oh, there it is, Freddie Barnes, a kiss and a score.
Oh, he dropped it!
No. Oh no, he's missed the kick and he's missed the try, has he? Maxi Medar was in there with a boot to disrupt.
He wants that dead ball area to open up and swallow him whole.
Great line from David Flatman. he missed the kick. Freddie Burns, a penalty bang in front of the sticks. He then thought he'd scored a try, went through, smile on his face, blowing kisses to the crowd. Must have felt like he was the most popular man in the whole of Bath. And then Maxi Medar comes through and knocks the ball out of his hand, and he felt like a prize plonker.
Maybe it impacted, maybe the penalty, the fact that he had hit the post in such an easy kick, he just thought, well, here's my moment, I'm making up for it here. But it's inexcusable. It's something that you would teach the grassroots level. Always look after the ball, either in two hands or under one arm, and do not dare celebrate until you dot that ball down.
Yep. Seen it go wrong so many
times. Well,
this
is what I was going to say. How many times have you been told by a coach not to do it?
Well, I haven't done it, so I'm lucky enough not to have done it. I mean, I've seen it happen a couple of times, and there's some big ones that you can look up on YouTube. You know, Leguizamon is a case in point. It's a mistake you make once. He'll never, ever, ever make anything like that mistake again. But going back to Flats's point in commentary, you know, there is nowhere else he would have wanted to be apart from inside and off that field from that moment onwards.
0-0. And obviously, you know, he had scored earlier in the game as well.
So
it was going to be his second try of the game, the winning try of the match. And obviously then after the very moment, Todd Blackadder pulled him off for the final few minutes. So sat with his head and his hands on the bench. And, you know, as a former teammate of mine, I felt for him.
So but how do you come back from that then, Rory?
Look, I think for me,
will he get picked?
The biggest thing for me, and I always struggled with it after having a poor game or having been involved in an incident that either led to a try, whether on a winning or losing team, I would play that over in my head time after time after time until the review was squared away. So that review would have been Monday. They would have been in on Monday morning. They're not going to leave that go without mentioning it. Todd Blackadder may have made a bit of a joke amongst it within there to try and calm the tension off the back of it, because you saw the player's reaction.
Though,
no,
well,
absolutely.
You saw the reaction of Jackson Willison as he ran in behind him, smacked him on the backside, and gave him a bit of tap on the head.
But how long does that anger last?
I don't think it lasts very long. You know, as a teammate, you would almost be dying inside for him. You know, I think his teammates will tear into him from now forevermore.
It's just the magnitude of the moment, though. It's the first round of the Champions Cup. You've got a home game, and you've got the opportunity to win the game. As it is, they come away and they've not won, and the pressure is just heaped on them off the back of it. It's just such a key moment, which obviously added to the headline.
Let's come on to Toulouse, who were pretty impressive, but they fed off a lot of counter-attack ball, Tom, and there were some standout moments. I mean, Colbe's footwork was just sumptuous, wasn't it?
No, he is outrageous as a player. One of those players you just are terrified to play against. What's your choice, Julian Savea or Cheslin Colbe? You know, go for Savea every time, because Colbe can skin you in a phone box, and they were talking about phone boxes all day, weren't they, in commentary? But he has pace to burn, amazing footwork. Combine that with deft touches from Medard, I thought he was outstanding. Not only did he tap the ball out of Freddie Burns' hand and didn't give up the chase, but actually some of the touches that he had from the back three. Toulouse do play a bit off counter-attack, and they do try and force an offload, which I do think they cause themselves problems at times still, but they're certainly getting back to where they were.
We've been asking on social media which players impressed you most in Heineken Champions Cup round one and why. A number of people going for Madar, including Benjamin Montpellier on Instagram. What a winning save for Burns. Away in England, what a player, he says. Let's remind you of those Pool 1 standings. Bearing in mind, bonus points are so crucial in the pool stages. Leinster top with 5, Toulouse in second with 4. Bath picking up that bonus point when they could have had so much more. And Wasps bottom after one round with nothing so far. Looking ahead to this weekend, Wasps-Bath is going to be a fascinating one, isn't it? I mean, two teams who are pretty low on confidence.
Pretty low on confidence. I think probably Wasps will be able to move on a lot easier from that, because you can just park a result like that and go, right, that's the wheels fell off, won't happen again, let's move on. Whereas Bath, I think that will really hurt, having lost at home so close as well.
Rory, what about Toulouse against Leinster?
Look, I think Leinster go into favourites, which seems strange to talk about playing away at Stade Arnis Vallon, but at the same time, they've got so much experience in this competition, they've got so much class, they can still get better. And I think, you know, they set out their stall in round one, but they still lost 5 of their lineouts. They weren't perfect the first half. There were a number of areas they can improve, and they'll go out there and they'll kick on again. It will be interesting to see if Leo Cullen makes any changes within there, because he can change players in and out without losing much strength. But I think Toulouse will have to rise to the challenge to come anywhere close to Leinster, albeit they've still got a fair bit of ability to lose and a nice mix of experience and youth.
Let's confirm those fixtures then. Saturday, the 20th of October, Wasps against Bath. It's a 3:15 local kickoff time at the Ricoh Arena on BT Sport 2. And then Sunday, the 21st of October, for Toulouse against Leinster. That's a 4:15 kickoff local time at the Stade Arnis Vallon. That's on FR Dirt, BT Sport 2 and BN Sports. Quick predictions, fellas, from both of you for Wasps-Bath.
I will go for a Wasps home win. I think they'll bounce back from a poor defeat in Dublin. And I think I'll go for Leinster again, funnily enough.
Rory?
I think it's a must win for both Wasps and Bath. But I think home advantage for Wasps, and I'm with Tom as well, and Leinster all day long.
To Pool 5 and an incredible weekend. If you're a Newcastle Falcons fan, a major shock beating Toulon 26 points to 25 in France. Tom, I imagine you must have been bouncing up and down. I don't know where you were watching it, but for Dean Richards and a team that has been under the cosh, had a miserable start to the Premiership, conceded in 20 seconds, that was an incredible performance.
Yeah, it was a horrible start, wasn't it? And you just thought they were going to be completely torn apart if it kept on going like that. But let's look at the way that it had been set up. We talked about it last week. They're both in 12th in their domestic competitions. But actually, Newcastle, they've played Exeter, Wasps and Saracens in their opening domestic round. So they're tough fixtures. They've got them out of the way. They didn't lose by much in those games. So I don't think they're as in a bad place as some people had been saying.
And where's that self-belief come from then?
I think it comes from the environment that Dave Wald has put together. I think that everything was put in place by Dean Richards, and there's a bit of a steely edge to it from the likes of Mickey Ward. But Dave Wald is, from having chatted to him about it, you know, he's very up for letting the players make good decisions and do what they want to do, just make sure they come off. You know, play from where you want to play and play an expansive style, which they have to do on a 4G pitch up in the northeast. But I think they've got a huge amount of belief in what they're doing and what they've done.
For me, it was the perfect game for Newcastle Falcons as well. Going away to Toulon, 3 times champions, and ultimately they're not expected to win that game. The way that, you know, just picking up on what Tom said, the way that the squad is built, they're a hardy bunch, they're a resilient bunch, and they would go out there and look at some of these big names in the opposition and say, you know what, I want to match myself against these guys this afternoon. Nobody gives us a chance coming out here. Obviously, as you say, opening moments, 20 seconds in, they concede a score, but they came back, they fought their way back into the game and edged it. Maybe there's just something in it. The fact that the final's in Newcastle, that the tournament kicks off with a Falcons win away at the former champions.
I think also that there are things that Newcastle need to work on. They missed 17 tackles. Now that, for a side, is not a great return. And you would expect a team like Toulon to be able to pick that apart. But you know, their work rate and their desire to get back off the floor and get involved again is great to see, and that's what got them through.
Well, I'm delighted to be able to speak to the former France captain now, Rafael Ibanez, a star hooker for Cast, Saracens, Wasps, amongst others. But he was commentating on the Toulon-Newcastle game, and what a performance from Newcastle. Equally, Rafael, what is going wrong at Toulon?
It was something pretty unexpected because in this competition, in the Champions Cup, Toulon only lost at home only once and against Saracens. So what achieved Newcastle yesterday was immense and well-deserved.
It's a different era now. Johnny Wilkinson's left, Carl Heyman's left, there's no Bakis Bota, and it's wrong to compare them to the European Galacticos that we saw before. But where is it that Toulon are lacking at the moment? For me, it seems that they're too direct in attack and also very predictable, as well as having there's a lack of leadership on the field, I think. Okay, you've got Guillaume Garrido who does a fantastic job, but when you remove him, there's probably not that many other players that put their hand up and there to be counted.
Well, my point of view is pretty simple. Toulon cannot live with the past anymore. Obviously, there were fantastic years under Bernard Laporte and with some great leaders on the field like Johnny Wilkinson, Bakis Bota, Juan Martin Fernandez Llobe, who's now involved as the assistant coach, fourth coach. But in the end, you know, it's always down to the players. And I realized, you know, watching and commentating the game yesterday, the captain, Rafael Lacafia, was a bit lonely, to be honest, especially when he had to make decisions. So do you need that link between the forwards and the backs? And that's something they really struggle to find again. And that's why probably they are so poor, actually, in terms of the way they approach the game. Of course, you know, tactically, it's a bit direct, it's a bit predictable. And the player who can really illustrate that is Julian Savea. Julian Savea, former All Blacks, one of the great All Blacks of all time. And you could not recognize him on the field. You know, the way he plays, it's just, and the poor discipline, yellow carded. So, well, all went wrong for Toulon last night, but I think as well, you know, Newcastle really played well and they took the chances, they took the opportunities and they show a lot of character, especially in the last 10 minutes of the game.
And Rafael, obviously there was the try scored by Toulon just 20 seconds into the game. Do you think that played a part? Obviously Toulon would have come into the game very confident against a number of players who they wouldn't recognise the names of. How much complacency do you think there was within that Toulon team? And even more so, how much of an impact do you think that try so soon in the first half played as the game developed?
No, yes, you're right. It may not have helped Toulon to really impose themselves, you know, into the game, and because they knew before the game Newcastle were not that in a great shape before the game, especially knowing that they're standing last in the Premiership. But obviously, you know, you just have to be ready for anything in that competition. And I must say, we were very lucky to watch these games. And the round one was fantastic to watch. There were so many tense games and tight games. That's what the Champions Cup can provide, you know. And from the first round, that's something to notice.
And Raphael, just some points on some of the other French teams at the moment, particularly Racing at Scarlets. I mean, they just got over the line there, so slow starters. But Toulouse, what should we really expect from them? Because they're going to be hosting Leinster this weekend, who have just annihilated Wasps. So there's
this pool will be so interesting. The thing is, Toulouse, they just come back in the Champions Cup. They are very ambitious. They have a long and great history in the European Cup, but they knew they didn't have any other option than winning that first away game. And of course, you know, everybody knows how it happened, and with this blunder from Freddie Burns, the poor Freddie Burns, in the last minutes of the game. But I think Toulouse, they know the pool is so tight, so difficult. They know that if they manage to beat Leinster next week, then maybe they can really think about more, you know, coming. But Leinster is, well, you know, they are the champions, and what they've done so far against Wasps was immense too. So they know it's going to be a big task for Toulouse to beat Leinster, even if it's at home on Sunday, and we'll be commentating the game too. So I think I cannot wait to commentate that game. It should be very exciting.
And Raphael, just on Cast, really, this competition, this is a really tricky competition for them. There's 13 years that they've not now got out of the pool stages. They're champions of France. Where does it all go wrong in this competition for them?
Well, I think you're right. Cast, you know, didn't really perform for the last few years in that Champions Cup, but they won the title. They won the French Championship last June, and that's a massive achievement for the club. So I believe the fact they won the championship, the French Championship, means now they can really target the Champions Cup. That will be something incredible for the players to get through that pool and maybe play in the quarterfinals. Why not? The fact they just they lost narrowly to Gloucester at the weekend, it's not too bad, you know, getting away from that game with one bonus point. They're still in it, and I think there's a strong belief in the Cast club. They can do something this year.
Well, Raphael, thank you so much indeed for joining us on the podcast tonight, and enjoy the weekend.
My pleasure. Let's enjoy the weekend. Yeah, good weekend of rugby coming.
Well, we nearly had a second shock of the weekend. Montpellier just overcoming a late scare to defeat Edinburgh 21 points to 15. Richard Cockrell's side have probably had, Rory, they've never had a better chance of causing a European shock.
Yeah, it was one they should have won. And it's not often teams, certainly Scottish teams, go away to somewhere like Montpellier and come away thinking that. And you've got to give Edinburgh credit for the way that they stuck in the game. They fought their way back into it. They conceded a couple of scores just before half-time that I thought they were going to have them disappear. One of them in particular was just really soft. Fouls break down the wing and Kinghorn missed him initially. And then off the back of it, Simon Hickey couldn't get his hands to him. So, but I thought they fought back their way back into the game. They scored a brilliant try through Stuart McInally, some lovely offloading play, but it was definitely one that got away.
Richard Cockrell said it proved there was more about them. But like Newcastle, they conceded very early on. And it does make you wonder with teams like Newcastle and Edinburgh, the start is so key, the restarts are so key, and those tend to be the areas they come off second best against the better teams.
Away from home in particular. And I think, Richard Cockrell doesn't want to be known as a gutsy loser because ultimately you've still lost the game. Yes, Edinburgh picked up an away losing bonus point by being within seven. But at the same time, those are the games that you want to get back on that flight after round one with a win in the bag. And then you go back home to face a Toulon side who have just been knocked over by Newcastle Falcons. So they'll be kicking themselves, undoubtedly. But They'll learn from it. It's a side who are delighted to be in the Heineken Champions Cup, and there's a lot more to come from Edinburgh.
Because, Tom, ifs, buts and maybes, but Edinburgh potentially could have had 9 points by this coming Sunday night. If they beat Toulon, they could have won away. It could have been a whole different story.
Yeah, very true. And I think, as Rory says, you very rarely get those opportunities. And I think Montpellier's belief in their home form and their strength in depth. You know, they've lost Goose and Cruden and Steyn playing in 10, and they slot in Pienaar, who was outstanding. You know,
from their point of view, thank God he was there.
Well, yeah. If you lost four, then it's an absolute shocker, isn't it? But you know that they have lost a lot of players, and their ability to just roll someone in and take their place. You know, Nadolo's gone. What's he? 100 and however many kilos, 150 kilos. And Ungandebe comes in, who's 74 kilos, a bit slightly different winger, but he's got a huge amount of pace and scores when he plays. So, you know, they've got a bit of a production line, and that's what puts them in a good place. But, you know, you have to start well against these teams in the French competition especially.
Let's run you through the pool five standings after the opening weekend. Montpellier top with four, Newcastle just beneath on four, Toulon and Edinburgh with a point each. So Newcastle against Montpellier, that'll be a terrific match, won't it? I mean, that's the kind of game which, having just beaten Toulon, you can kind of look Montpellier a bit square in the face, can't you? And say, come on, then what do you got?
Well, they will do, just because they've got people like Gary Graham and things like that aren't frightening coming forward. So I think they'll be really looking forward to it. Another chance to take a big scalp I messaged Tom Whitford last night, and they're looking forward to the trip to the northeast. And they did mention the plastic field, which is obviously been mentioned, because he wouldn't have mentioned that otherwise. So it will be really interesting to see how Montpellier react to going up to what will be a fairly cold and windswept Kingston Park.
Rory, have they got what it takes to top this pool in January?
I do think they have. And I think part of that is down to where Toulon are at the moment. And I think part as well, Montpellier for me lacked a lot at the weekend. And we've touched on a few of their injuries, but they looked very, very blunt in their attack. They relied entirely on the physicality of their men just to outmuscle Edinburgh. Edinburgh stuck in, and there were a couple of really soft tries in there that that Edinburgh will be absolutely fuming with. The Ingen Debbie one, where it was a crossfield kick that Henry Purgos lost sight of. It had come off a nice bit of play, but it was soft. And I think Newcastle will always back their home advantage. Nobody likes going to Kingston Park at this time of year. I think even Tom and I, as former Newcastle Falcons, would have turned up on a few occasions at Kingston Park, wishing that we were playing elsewhere. But I think they've got the minerals. I think it'll be really interesting to see how they front up against Montpellier this weekend.
I think also you're talking about two teams in Toulon and Montpellier that play exactly the same. So if you can work them out, at the moment, they're just coming straight at you. You know what runners are going to come. You know there's not a huge... It's not like playing against Leinster, for example, where there are options all over the place. It's pretty much 1-2 carry, and it was going straight at you and see if you can front it up, and Newcastle will fancy that.
Have Edinburgh got enough to beat Toulon, though? This is the moment Richard Cockerell will find out whether his team are good enough, frankly, because Toulon are there for the taking.
Toulon are there for the taking. I think this weekend will be a great weekend for Edinburgh. I think Toulon aren't in a great place, that we've talked about that, but it's an opportunity to topple a European heavyweight. Albeit that they're a falling start. You know, I think he's talked about it. They've misfired a bit during the Pro 14. And I think now's their opportunity to really give their season a kick in the backside.
It's a huge thing for me, that this game for Toulon, just to see whether there is character in that squad, where their leaders are. And we spoke about the start. Edinburgh get out the blocks at Murrayfield and put a score on Toulon early. Then you see whether they disappear or whether they've got any fight in them.
And that game is on Saturday, the 20th of October. Edinburgh against Toulon, a 3:15 kickoff local time at BT Murrayfield Stadium on BT Sport 3 and BN Sports. Sunday, the 21st, for Newcastle against Montpellier. That's a 1 o'clock kickoff local time at Kingston Park on BT Sport 2, BT Sport 4K UHD and BN Sports. Quick predictions from both of you.
I will go for Edinburgh on Saturday afternoon. I think they've got enough to get past Toulon, and I think I'm going to go with a Newcastle win.
I was going to join him, but just to go against Tom, I'll go for one home win, and that's going to be Edinburgh at BT Murrayfield, and I'll go for one away win. I think Montpellier will go up there and try and squeeze Newcastle out the game.
Thank you, gents. Next, we'll talk about Heineken Champions Cup pools 2, 3 and 4.
You're listening to the EPCR European Rugby Show.
Pool 2 and Munster came from behind to claim two precious away points in a 10-all draw against Exeter. Fellas, this was just what you love about European rugby. The conditions were dreadful. It was a proper in-your-face kind of game, played on the deck, played hard, played fast, and both teams thrived on it.
Yeah, they loved it. And, you know, it's not very often that sides contain Exeter. And that contain Munster. Both sides nearly made 200 tackles, which is an extraordinary number of tackles. And the players looked like they'd been through it. They were quite happy to stand up and just slug each other until the 80th minute. Two sides that really want to do well in this year's Heineken Champions Cup, and a great contest. 10-all, okay, it might not be an absolute thriller, but from a real purist perspective, a great game.
Exeter, though, Rory, did they play into Munster's hands? I mean, Omani was just doing what he does brilliantly. Tad Byrne, another tag, the second tag of the weekend, had an absolute stormer, didn't he?
Yes, he did. But look, you cannot get away from the conditions. The conditions at Sandney Park were unbelievable. The posts were almost blowing out the ground. I think as a result, that meant that everything was that much more conservative. Yes, like Tag Byrne had a brilliant game. With and without the ball, in the line-out, he... made the right calls so that Niall Scannell could hit the man in really tricky conditions. It was just a game that tied the hands of both teams in the way that they played, because the wind was blowing an absolute hoolie, and I don't think it suited either team. But ultimately, on the whole, they matched each other. It was a huge physical battle. And actually, you'd argue that neither team really deserved to lose at the end, so it was a fair result.
We've asked you on social media which player impressed you most in Heineken Champions Cup round one and why. Twitter, at Champions Cup. Search for European Rugby Champions Cup on Facebook and at European Rugby Champions Cup on Instagram. Hilary Fitzgibbon on Twitter. It has to be Tad Byrne. The guy is constantly in beast mode. A word as well on Joey Carberry, Tom May, as a former 10. He dodged a bullet towards the end, didn't he? I mean, I know we're learning a lot about Carberry, but that kick could have really cost them.
Yeah, and you know, there are moments like that, aren't there, in big games? You know, and we've seen it time and time again throughout the fixtures this weekend, where games are in the balance. There are fine moments that need to go your way, and that went his way. Exeter, they were that close, weren't they, to scoring themselves in the very last play. They kept the ball for a huge number of phases. And
20-odd phases. And yet it's very rare you see Exeter do that.
And that's, you know, back to your point, that's fine margins. It's the roll of a dice sometimes, and that's what ultimately cost both sides the opportunity to win, and we ended up with a draw.
Well, Gloucester's return to Europe's top club competition saw them beat top 14 champions Castres 19-14. Another wet, windy day at King's Home. Rory, your old team, Cipriani, very impressive once again, but the pack again to the fore. Ben Morgan, outstanding at 8.
Yeah, really interesting to hear Ben Morgan's comments off the back of it. Obviously, with the injury crisis for England at number 8, he's playing incredibly well. He sounds like he's loving his rugby. I think it's tough for the forwards around Danny Cipriani not to enjoy the rugby at the moment, because they produce good ball for him. He typically provides front foot ball with his backs, and then off the back of it, he must be a really nice player to play off. You've just got to expect the unexpected. And again, he showed in really trying conditions that he's playing some really great stuff.
Tom, for Cast though, I mean, they only had 3 of their 15 that won the top 14 playing in that match. I mean, I know they've got a limited squad. They want to focus their resources. But for the opening game of the tournament...
I know, you can't imagine them having those three just playing alone if they're at home at Pierre Fabre. But I think... I'm not sure. I think they believe that they're in the space that they can compete on both fronts at the moment. I think they're quite happy with their domestic competition and they're just trying to reinforce that at the moment. They've lost Benjamin Urda-Pijeta, which I think is huge for them. Dumora was outstanding at fullback last year, but actually for him to slot in at 10 and try and fit in with a guy that's basically run a team from start to finish, I think it's really difficult when a team has relied so much on one player. Look, Castar, they're difficult. They're very difficult to beat at home. But I'm not sure that they've got the ability to focus on two competitions at the moment.
Let's look at the Pool 2 standings. Gloucester top with 4. Munster and Exeter equal with 2 each. Castra propping up the bottom with 1. And the Gloucester head coach, Johan Ackerman, is looking forward to experiencing the atmosphere at Toman Park for the first time.
For me, it's like almost watching stuff over TV, and now it becomes a reality. And then the same for a lot of the players who's going to play there for the first time. I'm going to experience that for the first time, so I'm looking really forward to hearing a lot of the history and the atmosphere and the passionate stadium that it is. So, and then obviously there's a bit of South African involvement as well, with Johan van Graan as the head coach and JP Ferraro was my defensive coach back at the Lions, who's now the defence coach there. So it's going to be a good catch-up as well between friends, but a big challenge on the field. Hopefully the friendship will last before and after.
And Rory Lawson, there have been some famous Munster-Gloucester matches. I know you've been involved in them.
Well, there was the very, very famous one at Toman Park, whereby Munster had to win by an absolute landslide, and they did so in amazing conditions. And I've been on the wrong end of a quarterfinal loss in the Heineken Cup to Munster at King's Home. So I know what they're like as a European beast. They got out the blocks and did incredibly well, picking up 2 points in that first round at Sandy Park. So they'll be very keen to go back to Toman Park this weekend and make a big statement against Gloucester.
Well, let's get a perspective on Munster now from their former centre, James Downey, who also played for Leinster and 2 other sides in this season's Heineken Champions Cup. James, great to have you back on the pod.
Cheers, James. Good to speak to you again.
So what do you make of Munster Gloucester this weekend? How impressed have you been by the likes of Carberry having to lead the line and take charge, and Van Graan, what he's trying to do there?
Yeah, I think Munster seem to have made some good signings in Tyburn initially, and Joey Carberry, and I think they've added a real zest to that side. I think they were missing a couple of players last year, even over the past couple of years. And I know that Peter Mahoney's come out and said they just can't get over that line, that semi-final, and their struggles. They just missed that bit of quality. And I think that they've brought in that quality in those two players. And I think, bar that 88-minute kick from Joey Carberry, which kind of, I think a lot of people were worried about when it went dead, but look, it's one of those things and you don't want to change this player, but it just added that extra bit of class to that Munster side, and it's exciting times for Munster.
Jimmy, looking forward to Munster versus Gloucester this weekend, particularly to Stander versus Morgan and Pelledri. How do you see this one panning out?
Again, that's going to be, the two lads are going to go against each other the way CJ plays. He's so physical, isn't he? And then Morgan likes to get Gloucester going forward in the front foot. And I think it's going to be one of those typical nights in Thomond Park, a European game. How Gloucester deal with it, I don't know. Gloucester have impressed me so far anyway this season, the way they've gone about things. And I just think that CJ and Peter Mahoney there in the back row just might get the edge on the night.
James, Rory Lawson here. As a former scrum half myself, I've always got a keen eye on the number 9 jersey. And obviously, Duncan Williams is doing a good job in there. Have you got any intel on Conor Murray? Obviously, there's the mysterious press release on him and not wanting to talk about his injury. And also, how important is it that he gets back into the red of Munster sooner rather than later?
Well, firstly, on the if Conor Murray's back, I would have thought he would have been back, and he signed his new deal there, and I think he said that he's hoping to be back this week, but then Van Graan's come out and said he's not, so hopefully we'll see him in the next couple of weeks. But I think it's quite refreshing for a player nowadays to kind of say, I just want a bit of privacy. I know over here everyone gets a little bit hot and bothered over it, and they want to know everything about what's going on and when people are back, and I think sometimes that we give too much information, but look, I guess this is what the paying public want to get. But I do think both for Munster and Ireland, he's obviously a key player. He's one of the world-class players that we have. So for both sides, he's a key cog in that. And I think Munster, if they do want to kind of make that extra step, need Conor fit. But as you say, I think Duncan Williams really stepped up at the weekend and made one of those last-ditch tackles there just to save Munster.
And Jimmy, we were talking about Leinster earlier in the pod. Is it easy to see if they've evolved from last season? I mean, they were imperious last time, but I mean, they took it up another level. We've been talking about the effect of Felipe Contepomi on the squad. Can you tell if this Leinster squad have evolved, or is it still the same old recipe?
I think they have a couple more strings to their bow, to be honest. I think, like, it's interesting you mentioned Felipe there, and I think that try just after half-time, James Lowe going through, was just kind of a bit of Felipe's stamp on things. Okay, we're used to the kind of wraparounds that you'd see Johnny Sexton doing, but when you see a guy like Tadhg Furlong have a little step and draw in the winger and offload it then to go up the left-hand side, that was sublime from a tight head prop. Not many modern props can do that, and I just think that Leinster at the moment are just so far ahead. But I think you've got to look at it, take it in contrast as well with the just before half-time, the yellow card is a tight enough fixture, and Leinster scored just before half-time and just after, and kind of that's their championship minutes when you can kind of switch off and lose things. And I think Wasps, you can't really defend against a Leinster side like that for so long and without the cracks appearing. So look, Leinster do look impressive. They look the team to beat, but to lose away now is a different story, and they were the flag bearers over the past couple of years when Gino Vez was in charge, so they still have that aura about them.
Great to have you on the pod again, Jimmy. Thanks very much, and enjoy the European weekend.
Cheers, guys.
That's James Downey, formerly of Munster, Leinster, Wasps, Northampton Saints, of course. So many teams he's played in those big matches. Fellas, let's move on to Cast against Exeter. And my goodness me, Tom May, Exeter have to win that match.
Well, they have to win, but I think they've been given a head start by Munster. From the physicality that was shown at Sandy Park, Exeter had to match that, and that's what they have to do when going down to Cast. If they can match that, then I actually think they can probably, at times, steamroll a Cast, and I expect a good away win.
Rory, what do you make of this weekend?
Oh, it'll be really interesting to see what team is selected for Cast. I think Exeter know the challenge in front of them, and actually the style of rugby that Cast play will probably play into Exeter's hands. They'll be keen to get some more ball in hand and some more of the movement game played, and they'll hope not to be playing in a hurricane. But at the same time, I'm probably with Tom. I think Exeter will go away from home and pick up a win. I think it's a brilliant challenge at this stage of the season for Johan Ackerman's Gloucester side, going away to Munster, to Thomond Park, against a side who thrive off European rugby and who will be buoyed off of picking up 2 points at Sandy Park. It's a great, great challenge for Gloucester, whose pack have stepped up. I think Munster might just be too good for them at the weekend, but I think it'll be an absolute cracker.
Munster against Gloucester, a 1 o'clock kickoff local time on Saturday, the 20th of October. That's at Thomond Park, of course, on Virgin Media, Channel 4 and BT Sport 2. And also on Saturday, the 20th of October, Castres against Exeter, a 2 o'clock kickoff local time at the Stade Pierre Fabre, at BN Sports, BT Sport 3. Tom May, your predictions.
I will go for a home victory at Thomond Park, and I'll say that Exeter will win away in France.
Rory, you've already kind of alluded to it, but we need this in writing.
Yes,
contract.
Home win for Munster. Albeit, I'd love Gloucester to win away from home. And for me, I also think Exeter will go on the road and pick up another win.
We've had plenty of upsets in round one of the Heineken Champions Cup, but another, of course, was Cardiff's brilliant performance. Challenge Cup winners, you'll remember, last season, they beat debutants Lyon 30 points to 21 in France, thanks to 20 points from this man.
Anscombe through the middle. What a break this is. Has support on his outside as well from Jenkins. Anscombe, little Tommy sends him up the river. And over he goes. What a score that is from Gareth Anscombe. Brilliant.
Gareth Anscombe scoring 20 points in that match. And this was a team which were under the cosh at the scrum, Tom May. I mean, I know they were okay at the breakdown, the back row doing the job they've always done, but at scrum, they were seriously under pressure.
Yeah, they were under pressure. But I think, there was enough players that put their hand up across the field, which got them over the line ultimately. They did that with not even 40% possession. I thought Thomas Williams was outstanding. He made a line break to put in Ollie Robinson for a score. And then he had a great finish himself for his own try. And obviously Gareth Anscombe put his hand up. We were talking about him last week, weren't we, and his desire to get in that Welsh shirt. That was certainly a performance that he'll be really proud of.
And it's because he was playing from 15, which we talked about last week, Rory. There's a difference when Anscombe plays at 15. He offers something different to Cardiff, which he can't necessarily do from 10.
Yeah, definitely. I think Johnny Mulvihill, the Blues coach, made his intent clear by picking Gareth Anscombe at fullback, Jared Evans at 10. And then when you look at the back five of the scrum as well, it was all going to be based on a high-tempo movement game, move the big Lyon pack around. When you look at Macaulay Cook and Josh Turnbull in the second row, with regards to second rows, who they were matching up against, they were the smaller men. And then the back row, you've basically got three open-side flankers there. Ollie Robinson, Ellis Jenkins, Josh Navidi, and my goodness, how good were they on the ground, being able to halt the momentum of Lyon when they were in possession, and it played into Cardiff's hands, and it was a really sort of eeksy-peeksy game, but it was just the class of Anscombe in the sort of final moments to take the game away from Lyon, and it's a brilliant away win for them.
Talking about away wins, the things you've got to do, you just got to get down and dirty, you've got to get in, almost smash and grab, do what you need to do and get out. Not even 40% possession, as I mentioned, not 40% to territory. They made 127 tackles, Cardiff. Lyon only made 68. That's ridiculous.
They must have missed a few.
Only
made 68.
Yeah, I think, that's a sign of a side that are that they're going to work and grind a team down. And, Rory mentioned that back row. They would be key to that. I think Lyon would be pretty disappointed, though, with that result.
Well, they didn't capitalise on the scrum. I've got a scrum half and I've got a fly half here. You must find that maddening.
Well, yeah, because you'd expect to have, if you're getting the rub of the green at the scrum, you'd expect to be on the front foot in every
capacity.
Why
is Boxeys not taking advantage of it, or at least trying to orchestrate something with that pressure?
Well, I think Boxeys is...
Because Lionel Boxeys is Lionel Boxeys.
There's a few issues there. Whether he's a nine, whether he's a ten.
But we know Boxeys has had his issues.
Yeah, he's had his issues. But then perhaps if there is a Cipriani on the back of all of that possession, then maybe that result looks slightly different. I think Lyon, given what they've been doing in the top 14, they'll be really disappointed to start this competition losing at home.
Let's see what you've had to say on social media. We've been asking which player impressed you the most in Heineken Champions Cup round one and why. Cardiff Blues, Brown on Instagram said, for me, it has to be Gareth Anscombe. 20 points with that fantastic solo try, instrumental in a massive win out in Lyon. It certainly was one of those standout moments. To the two times Champions Cup winners next, Saracens, who ground out a 13-3 win over Glasgow Warriors at the Scotstoun Stadium. This was a proper arm wrestle, brutal, physical. Saracens roughed up Glasgow, but they were playing with real ambition and endeavour. Rory, you were commentating on that one. This was it wasn't a very high point scoring match, but there was plenty to watch.
It was a huge tussle. It was about as good a one try game as you get. It was, the intensity was there. I think the number of aching bodies, the day after the game would have been there for everyone to see. For me, it was one whereby Saracens got the lead and they got it through a very, very well-worked try. The one real piece of high-quality attacking play that they managed to pull together. The physicality that they brought with Mako Vunipola, Billy Vunipola, Michael Rhodes is there. Toje had a big game and asked the referee a fair few questions. Will Skelton throughout. But it was a pointless, a scoreless second half. And Glasgow, I believe, will feel, much like Edinburgh, that it was one that they probably should have won.
One player that I think put his hand up for Glasgow, and maybe you can comment on this, Rory, Adam Hastings. How do you think he's shaping up? He's obviously got a big pair of boots to step into in terms of Finn Russell.
Yeah, very much so. And he's had a fantastic start to the season. He's had two man of the matches in the Pro 14 in six games. Probably could have picked up another couple. He's been instrumental. But he faced a very different challenge. The suffocating Saracens defence that was in front of him. A couple of times he took the ball really flat to the line, which I love to see. But the runners off him just weren't quite used to the same intensity of defence, and he was caught in possession on a couple of occasions. Equally, he did some very good stuff. And I guess you always look back in hindsight in these games, and 4 or 5 minutes into the game, Glasgow started very well. He had a penalty almost in the same position as Freddie Burns missed from for Bath, and he put it right of the post, missed. And that was a great opportunity for Glasgow to just get a foothold on the game and come away with points. And as it was, they couldn't make some of the final moments in that game really matter as well.
Have you ever had a broken nose from rugby?
You're looking at me as if I must have.
Well, sometimes. Only reason I ask, Jamie George, broken nose. Mario Toje, broken nose. And that's not, we haven't even started talking about the Vunipolas with Billy now broken out with a broken arm.
Yeah.
And obviously Mako with the strain, a calf strain. They've got, we talk about England's injury problems. My goodness, Saracens have got huge problems, haven't they?
Yeah, and you look back to last year. That was exactly what caused their problems in this competition last year. I think, look, Matt, you can play with a broken nose. It's just a case of dealing with a bit of pain.
You must be a bit worried that someone's going to come right for
your
face.
Yeah, which is why, you know, they're tough forwards, aren't they? They can deal with that. You know, that shows that they'll put their head where it hurts. I think the worrying one for Saracens and England is Billy Vunipola. And, you know, that's three breaks of an arm in a year is pretty good going.
To the Pool 3 standings, Saracens top with 4, Cardiff 4, Lyon and Glasgow still to score. So Saracens against Lyon then. Prop Juan Figolo says Saris want to show the newcomers what the Heineken Champions Cup is all about.
We want to show them like how tough is this tournament. We know they're new in the tournament, but we want to show how you have to play these games and how important it is playing home for us.
And that's exactly what they will be doing, with or without their injured players, Tom May.
Well, yeah, and if you think that every one of them is going to be thinking exactly the same, then it's a terrifying prospect for Lyon coming over. Lyon, yes, it's their first appearance, but they have been doing well at home in the domestic competition. I just think this year there's too much focus for them at home. I think this is going to be a tough ask to go to Saracens, especially when they won away from home, but I think they'll be slightly disappointed they haven't been able to put away Glasgow as they have done other teams throughout this season so far.
And Rory, what if Cardiff against Glasgow? Because they will feel pretty hard done by, won't they? They only scored 3 points despite plenty of enterprise. And Cardiff, well, they've got bucket loads of enterprise. They're really confident with the ball in hand. They're playing at home and they know they could have 9 points by the end of this weekend.
Yeah, they do. I think it'll be a cracking showdown for me. I think Glasgow actually played their best game of the season at home at Scotstoun against Saracens. On another day, they might have capitalised on one or two of the breaks in the final quarter or an early penalty. It might have been a different result. They'll be kicking themselves for that. But I believe if Glasgow go down to Cardiff with the intensity that they had at Scotstoun last week, they'll come away with a result. And they know now that in the past few seasons, the Champions Cup has passed them by too soon on in the tournament. So it's very much a must-win for Glasgow, even at this stage.
Because, of course, Tom, Glasgow were blown away this time last year, weren't they, in those early rounds? They were just missing line breaks, weren't they? They were doing the first part brilliantly, but just failing to dot the I and cross the T. How do you... I mean, you can practice that in training till the cows come home, but how do you nail that in a match?
Well, I think it's just doing what's in front of you and doing the simple things well. You know, they beat 23 defenders against Saracens. There's not many teams that will put that stat up by the end of this season. And that shows, you know, there's just a bit of an inability to be able to convert that, take those opportunities. I think they're going to struggle down at Cardiff. I think Cardiff will be absolutely buzzing having won away in Lyon. I think it'll be a really good fixture.
Saturday, the 20th of October for Saracens against Lyon. That's the first match in the pool this weekend. 5:30 kickoff local time at Allianz Park on BT Sport 2 and BN Sports. And then Sunday for the Cardiff-Glasgow match. That's the 21st of October. 3:15 kickoff local time at the Cardiff Arms Park on BT Sport 3. Rory, your predictions first this time.
Saracens at home win, even with significant injuries to their squad, particularly up front. I think they'll have too much for Lyon. And the second game, Blues-Glasgow Warriors, is a really, really tough one for me to call. It's going to be a big, big battle at the breakdown. And I think Cardiff Blues might just edge it.
Tom?
I'll go exactly the same, just because...
Wise. You're a wise man.
Rory is...
Why would you not follow
like
Lord Lawson?
Yeah.
To pull four and a late penalty try for the 2018 finalists, Racing 92 secured a 14-13 away victory against Scarlets in pool four. This was a match of such tight margins, that penalty try coming late. But if Halfpenny got his kicks, Rory Lawson, then Scarlets could have been looking at 4 points.
It's not often you say that either, is it? You know, Lee Halfpenny's normally so dependable off the tee. Racing just stayed in the fight, didn't they? I had a keen interest, obviously, watching Finn Russell, who was eventually awarded man of the match. But they stayed in the fight. It was tough conditions. They managed to get the penalty that they got the line out from, generated a strong drive with their enormous pack. And for me, it was a penalty try. It was a yellow card. It was the right decision. And Racing did enough just to get over the line. And I think for me, it was a big statement for them. A number of people have spoken about someone away from Leinster winning it. Yes, Saracens naturally are in the hat on that front. Exeter were spoken about. Racing, a French side winning away from home against a side of Scarlet's quality was a big statement.
But I remember Florian Rossignol last week, Tom, was talking about how Racing don't really go out there to win it, do they? They almost wait for them. They feed off mistakes. And again, this was another classic example.
Yeah, but I just think, you know, we talked up Scarlets a bit last week, didn't we? And I think that's an opportunity lost for them. That was there for the taking. Yes, Halfpenny missed that kick. Very kickable in terms of his ability. And that was 13-7 when he missed that kick.
And how much did they miss Patchell as well?
Yeah, but every side's missing someone, aren't they? So you just have to be able... You're in there. You have to be able to deal with that. I think Racing... They have to change the way they play. They have changed the way they play a bit, certainly since Finn Russell went, and Zeebo adds a lot to
their
attack.
I've got both of you here as halfbacks. What do you make of what Russell's tried to do since he's arrived?
It's difficult if you're just the one guy that's trying to change it. I think, I think he brings natural flair to it, but I guess it's a little bit, it's how the coaches buy into it as well. I guess the easiest comparison, Cipriani's gone to Gloucester. And Johan Ackerman has bought into what Cipriani brings. The other players around him start predicting what he's going to do, albeit it's not always easy. At the same time, Finn Russell is difficult to read at times. You have to give him the freedom to do so. And Dave Rennie said as much when coaching him last season, he's not an easy player to coach all the time. But you've got to expect the unexpected. And as Tom says, for Racing to get away from the up the guts, one-out runners, the physicality... Simon Zeebo looks like he really enjoys playing outside Finn Russell. I think he's scored 6 tries already this season in the top 14. But everyone else just has to try and get that little bit closer to being on the same page as Finn.
I think they're moving in the right direction. And you look at the players that they've got, and I love the balance that Chavonsi gives to them in the midfield. Imhoff, Vakatawa, Teddy Thomas, Rokothoko, Zeebo.
We talk about Leinster's strength and depth.
Yeah, and you look at Finn Russell's strengths. It's about creating holes and making the right decision and putting the ball in that hole. Well, actually, those guys are very good recognisers of where the space is. So if they can keep running onto that, then actually Racing's game will change. Perhaps it was limited slightly by some... fairly tough conditions, but these are the conditions that they have to play in week in, week out when they're away from home.
You're talking of conditions. Let's move on to the Ulster-Leicester game now. 3 second-half tries, 9 points in the boot of John Cooney. A convincing 24-10 victory in the end against the Tigers. Remember, 2 times European champions at the Kingspan Stadium. They were toothless Tigers for much of that game, Rory Lawson. But from Ulster's perspective, they played the conditions exceptionally well. Their handling in the wet was pretty amazing.
Yeah, handling, physicality, set piece. They just got the basic right that you know you have to get right in conditions like that. And they were comfortable in the end against Leicester. Obviously, Tuolangi's try towards the end of the match was the one real positive that the Tigers could take away. But for me, Ulster were impressive. I think Will Addison is a strong addition.
Good signing.
A good signing. And he's settled into that environment. I think Dan McFarlane, given how late he went into the Kingspan to coach the Ulster side and the environment that he was coming into, I think he's done incredibly well. And that was a very, very good win for Ulster in their first match of the Heineken Champions Cup, which was so important after the difficulties of last season.
And from an Ulster perspective, wonderful to see Henderson, O'Connor to the fore. I mean, getting down and dirty, Tom, once again, which in conditions like that you really need. And they are going to have to play exactly the same way against Racing, who are going to take them head on up there in the tight.
Yeah, they are. And that's one of Racing's real strengths, of their pack. You know, the
good prelude, really, wasn't it?
Yeah, the warm-up to aperitif to what's coming next week. You know, I think that game, it was horrific, wasn't it, in terms of conditions. And a first half, not a huge amount to write home about in terms of points scored, but in terms of sticking into a game plan, really grinding a team down and actually, you know, using the full 80 minutes to really send your message. You know, they tore Leicester to pieces. And you know, Rory mentioned it, that the late scores for Leicester make that scoreline look a lot more level than I think the game actually was.
Pool 4 standings then. Ulster top with 4, Racing just beneath them. Scarlets with 1, Tigers still to score. So to look ahead to Leicester against the Scarlets, let's hear from both captains, Ken Owens of Scarlets, and first Leicester's Tom Youngs.
We all know how important home games are, and we're on a Friday night with Scarlets, which would be great. I haven't played a Friday night for a long time, so really looking forward to that. We're a quality side, play some really good rugby. And again, get them to Welford Road, and it'll be a great occasion, like European rugby is. I think nighttime kickoffs are pretty unique on a Friday night as well. We'll give it an extra little bit of stardust.
There's some big history between Leicester and ourselves in European competition, so it'll be good to get that rivalry back. But you know, it's going to be a tough game up there, and you know, they're a very set piece dominated team, but you know, they like to play the ball as well. Now they've added that to that string to their bow, you know, especially with Jordan Murphy taking over as coach, and we know it's going to be tough up there. And on a Friday night fixture, and it's just one we're looking forward to again. It's just exciting to be part of such a great competition.
Tom May, name me Leicester's main strength right now.
That is a tough question. Manu Tuolangi?
I would have had to say just about the same. The fact that he's fit.
Yeah.
Is that all that, I mean, that says something. You're talking about the 2 times European champions. Well, and I all think we can also, say is that they've got a good outside center.
Look, I think, you know, George Ford is performing a lot better than perhaps he has done over the last sort of season and a half. I think we're starting to see him get back to his best. But I think Leicester, they don't quite have that sort of that aura of the team that, you know, we've seen dominate European competitions in time gone by. I think this is going to be really tough, this game for them this weekend. I think Scarlets will be kicking themselves. They got a bonus point at home, so they need to go to Welford Road and they need to win. I think it's going to be tough for Leicester to really try and almost drag their form into this competition to get on top of Scarlets.
Because, Rory, they're conceding a lot of points. The defensive line speed's obviously not sharp enough, but if you concede so much, how on earth do you give yourself a chance to take that, maybe that 50-50 shot on attack, which you probably would do if you weren't leaking so much?
Yeah, for me, it starts up front a bit. I remember going to Welford Road with Gloucester, and you'd play on the smaller pitch, and as a result, you'd be coming up against a big pack who just dominated set piece, dominated things physically. The breakdown was an absolute scrap, and then off the back of it, if they got front foot ball, they would cause you a few problems. You just don't sense the same. And just picking up on what Tom said, you look at the pack, I just don't see where you're real match winners are within that pack, and who the guys are that you look on the team sheet and you really fear. And I think Scarlets will go up there and give it a real crack. Conditions will dictate a bit, and it's a hugely important game for Jordy Murphy. I think one of the other strengths of Leicester is the fact that the players are all willing to play really hard for Jordy Murphy, because he's a guy that everybody likes. I want him to do well. He's a really top bloke, and he's been chucked in the deep end there, obviously taking over very early on in the season, but it's a big challenge for them.
And that game, as Tom Youngs was saying, Friday the 19th of October should be a cracking night at Leicester. 7:45 kickoff for the Tigers against the Scarlets at Welford Road on BT Sport 2. Next day, the Saturday the 20th, it's Racing 92 against Ulster. That's a 6:30 kickoff local time at the Paris La Défense Arena. BN Sports and BT Sport 3. And that stadium, Tom, is a cracking stadium, isn't it?
Well, it's got rugby. Big cinema at one end, isn't it?
Well, so you get bored.
Amazing, yeah.
You can watch Johnny English or something down the other end.
Yeah, that's a good theatre to have big competition like this in.
On that point of the stadium, though, how big a difference do you think that's making to the way Racing are playing?
Well, compare it to their last Cabbage
arena,
Patch.
Exactly.
You know, they had to try and, you know, develop their game. You can't go into an, you know, indoor arena that's state of the art, turn all the lights off, make it all flashing lights pre-kickoff, and then just grind out wins. You know, you have to try and, you know, put on a show. They're the Parisian artists, if you like. And I guess bringing in someone like Finn Russell, bringing in Simon Zebo, they're going to add a bit of spice to that. That's what people come to watch. And it's a great place for them to try and build this style of rugby.
Predictions time. Rory, we'll start with you for Leicester Scarlets.
It's a tricky one, isn't it? I think it'll be keenly contested, but I think the Scarlets will do enough.
Tom?
I will go exactly the same. I think you know, they have to win. Mentioned it just before, that bonus point at home, that will be key when it comes to the end of this round stage, but they have to try and nick a win on the road.
Rory, Racing, Ulster?
Racing at home, potentially with a 4-try bonus point.
Tom?
I'll go Racing at home as well, just to make it. I don't want to end up losing again, so, you know, I want to copy Rory.
You were pretty meagre last week, weren't you, Tom? You got 6 out of 10 in your round one predictions. Florian Ross and Euro
Guest
got
was it?
7 out of 10.
I got the one that mattered, though.
The key fixture was Scarlets 13-14, because Florence went for Racing, and I'm afraid he went for the Scarlets.
Yeah, I know. But he's cost me there.
I bet he has, yeah, absolutely. Well, next we'll talk about the European Rugby Challenge Cup.
I'm Dylan Hartley. You're listening to the EPCR European Rugby Show.
It's the EPCR European Rugby Show with James Burridge, Tom May and Rory Lawson. Let's talk now about the European Rugby Challenge Cup. Some big scores here. Tom May, what was your pick of the weekend's matches?
Well, we looked at Northampton against Claremont last week, didn't we? Sorry. And, well, Claremont, they smashed the Saints at home at Franklin's Gardens, 41-20. I think Worcester winning on the road against Stade Francais, who've been sensational in the top 14, that's worth a mention. But probably also Sale Sharks winning at the Stade Emmy Giral down in Perpignan. Perpignan haven't been great this year, but there was a good win on the road nonetheless.
And Rory, which matches are the pick of round two for you?
That was one that stands out in particular. Worcester Warriors and Ospreys both won last week. And, you know, for me, Worcester... It was a win that showed real character last week, and they go back to the Six Ways to play against Ospreys, and I think it's a great opportunity for them to start building some real confidence.
Where's that confidence come from, Tom May, when it comes to Worcester?
Well, I think, you know, it's taken some time to try and develop it, hasn't it? There's been some tough times down at Worcester, but actually that win that they got in the Premiership away at Leicester, you know, that's going to give them a huge amount of confidence going to any fixture, any stadium across Europe. They'll fancy their chances now.
Now, for all the latest on this competition, follow at ER Challenge Cup on Twitter and go to the European Rugby Challenge Cup page on Facebook.
I'm John Smith, and this is the European Rugby Show.
Champions Fantasy Rugby. Pick your teams on HeinekenChampionsCup.com, and you can play the daily fantasy game or the classic version, which Tom and I started playing ahead of round one. Don't forget, choose your captain and kicker well. Only your designated kicker receives points for conversions and penalty kicks, while your captain scores double points. There are limited transfers between rounds. Stop laughing, Tom. There are 3 special cards to play on a single round of your choosing. Wild card for unlimited free transfers, a player triple points card, and a team double points card. Now, you're laughing already, so...
I've made some massive blunders here.
what, on your team?
Tell me about yours first.
So, disappointed with Keith Earls. He didn't get me anything. I'll be having a word with Sinossi, because actually, you know, if he'd scored that try and Toulon hadn't caused it to be a penalty try, I would have got a few more there. I've got 73 points.
Well done.
Obviously nowhere near good enough, because I think the guy who's leading has got 270 points from the opening weekend, which is astonishing.
I would suggest he researched too hard for this. So I reckon I would have done all right, but in actual fact, none of my players have got me any points, because I forgot to register my team until halfway through the Leinster Wasps fixture.
So technically that means you've lost the opening round to me.
And I've just realised I put Conor Murray in at 9 as my goal kicker.
Have you been watching what's been going on in Ireland recently?
So, I think I maybe got him and Farrell mixed up with my season.
You were giving me so much grief last week about how you should wait to put your
team... I'm happy to let you have a week ahead, to be fair. You're that rubbish that...
Well, this coming from a man who couldn't be bothered to get his team on in time. I'm not taking...
I wanted to spend as much time as I could researching it.
So much so that you put Conor Murray at 9. Rory, that's what this is all about. No doubt, I know you're going to get your team in, but it's proof that actually choosing a team is not as easy as it looks.
Very much so. I obviously would have chosen Leinster double points and James Lowe as my star.
You wouldn't have had Conor Murray as your kicker.
And I probably wouldn't have had Conor Murray as my kicker unless I wanted 0 points like you, Tom. But no, it's great fun. And actually going into it, the games are so tough to predict as it is, let alone the individuals who are going to star in them.
Right, don't forget to watch round 2 of the Heineken Champions Cup this weekend. All the matches are on BT Sport in the UK and Ireland. BN Sports is the home of the Champions Cup in France, with the majority of fixtures from each round. FR Dirt also has the Toulouse-Leinster match. Channel 4 in the UK and Virgin Media in Ireland will broadcast Munster against Gloucester on free-to-air television. And in the US, Newcastle-Montpellier will be on NBC Sports, with all Heineken Champions Cup matches available on the NBC Sports Gold platform. Right, before we go, the key questions you think that need to be answered, fellas, this weekend from what we've seen.
Now, what is the response that Wasps come up with after their drubbing out in Dublin? And also, I think, you know, from a fantastic win down in the south of France, how can Newcastle, you know, continue that form against a really high-flying top 14 outfit in Montpellier?
Rory, what do you reckon?
For me, it's a tale of two sides who lost in round one. Have Toulon got any fight in them as former champions? And another set of former champions back at home. Do Leicester Tigers have what it takes to bounce back and get themselves back into this competition?
And does Freddie Burns start for Bath this weekend?
He will.
Yeah. Will he make the same mistake again? No.
And on that bombshell, that's all we've got time for on the EPCR European Rugby Show. Don't forget, Heineken Champions Cup round 2 gets underway with Leicester against Scarlets on Friday night. There are 9 more great matches across the whole weekend. You can stay up to date with the competition on Twitter, Facebook and Instagram. Go to heinekenchampionscup.com to play Champions Fantasy Rugby and for all the best content. But for now, from Tom May, Rory Lawson and myself, James Burridge, it's goodbye.